Good evening, Rabbi Mayavsky. The lost opportunities, of course, there are many of us who did not lose opportunities, and we highlight both of them here in this week's Parsha and in Shavuos. It all goes together. And so what I wanted to do was begin with the Parsha, and then we'll finish off with Shavuos and see how they coincide in terms of lost opportunities. We begin with the Parsha, and we see that God is instructing Moshe to take a census. And the purpose of the census is now to create the standing army, to see how many people, and later on, of course, they're going to send, based on this, they're going to send the spies. But unfortunate thing about the census is that it causes divisiveness. And the reason it causes divisiveness is now, during the first census in Parshas Kitsisa, they weren't broken down into Shvatim. We didn't have a census for Shevet Reuven or Shimon or Levi or anybody in particular. Bnei Yisrael were just counted with their Machzis HaShekel as one large group, and they came to a total figure. Now, because of the Egel, the Levium had to be separated. And, of course, this separation causes a lot of animosity, which we see ends up with the story of Korach, ends up with the story of, believe it or not, partially because of Nadav and Avihu. And there are various things that happen because of it, but basically the divisiveness in Klal Yisrael comes to a head over here at this point in time. Had there not been the Maisa Egel, everybody would have been one cohesive unit. The Bechorim would have been the Kohanim. Every single Shevet would have had a representative. All the Bechorim, there would be many from each Shevet, and nobody would be singled out. No Shevet would be singled out for the Kohuna, and therefore we would have a different scenario. And now the Egel causes all these different problems. Nadav and Avihu, of course, as we've mentioned before, the Pasuk begins, Va'ela Shmos B'nei Aaron HaBechor Nadav. The Bechor was Nadav. Why does the Pasuk at this point in time put an Esnachta after Nadav, divide Nadav and Avihu? It says, Vavihu Elazar V'Samar. It's strange to divide up the Pasuk that way, because in reality, Nadav was the only one who would have been a Kohen regardless, because he was a Bechor, and now that he was Aaron's eldest son, he was now a Kohen as well. The problem is he lost his opportunity because he made one mistake. The Parsha says over here, it says, Vayomos Nadav Vavihu, and then it suddenly gives us a reason. It says Uvanov, not necessarily a reason, but why would it mention it here when it says Uvanov lo hayu lohem, they did not have any children? And that is, we go back to Parshas Mishpatim, as the Medrash tells us right there, the Pirkei de Rebbe Elazar says that they had this conversation that when Moshe and Aaron, who are now elderly people, we have to be prepared because they won't live much longer, or not even if they live much longer, they won't have the strength. They are getting elderly, and they won't have the strength to lead Klal Yisrael, and we have to be prepared to be Dayanim. The problem is that, as we learn in Gemara in Sanhedrin and in the Gemara in Harius as well, that a Dayan is only eligible to be a Dayan if he's had children, if he has experienced Tsar Gidl Bonim. If he's had children, he understands, and therefore he could be a Rachman. He should have Rachmanis and a little Savlonus, and then he will understand how to be a judge properly. And if Nadav and Avihu made the mistake that they wanted to be so close to God that they didn't bother, maybe no one was good enough for them, that they thought that they could be a leader, that was their Eish Zarah. This was their problem. They were not Royu to be a leader in the first place, because you have to be married with children to be capable of being a leader, to be capable of being a judge. Certainly that disqualifies you if you haven't brought up children. More so if you are very old and it's been a long time since you brought up children, you're also, the Gemara debates whether you're qualified at that point, because maybe you don't remember bringing up children. It's been so many years as well. But that first person in this parasha who lost opportunity over here was Nadav and Avihu. But Bnei Yisrael with the Egel, they also lost the opportunity, which brings us to so many other points over here in the parasha. Now, one other point in the parasha as well, it tells us It says, Elish Mos B'nei Aronu Moshe, Moshe V'Aron, and it lists their children. Doesn't list what happens to the children of Moshe. The children of Moshe are not even listed. And the only children that are left from Aaron are Elazar and Isamar. But the Elazar and Isamar are given, their lineage is given to Moshe Rabbeinu. Of course, as we know, we are told that if somebody teaches children, it's like they're his own children. But it's so much more than that. It's what happened to Moshe's children. And this is the point. We see at the beginning of Parshas Shemos, all the way back then, when Moshe was saying, Shlach no b'yad tishloch, he did not want to be the messenger. As leaders know full well that taking on the responsibility of leading a nation, as he was asked to do, he would have to be, he was qualified because he was a shepherd and understood. That's another thing that Nadav and Avihu were not qualified to be leaders in terms of that, because not only that, but they had never been shepherds. And all the great leaders, Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, Moshe, and David, they were all shepherds leading their flock. And they understand what it's like to be a savlon, to have compassion, to have, you know, to be patient. And that's what they need. And they did not have that patience as well. But now Moshe Rabbeinu, when God prevails upon him to be the leader, one thing happens now. He realizes, and he knows full well, he's giving up his family life. And it's to tell us how much Moshe sacrificed. He did not lose the opportunity. Moshe, on the other end, took the opportunity to lead Kal Yisrael, to be the Rabban Shel Yisrael, but he was willing to do it and sacrifice, that we call it Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe, because he understood what it took. It's to highlight the godless of Moshe, that taking upon him, he had, doesn't even mention his two children. It's to highlight the fact that he wasn't even able to bring up his two sons at all. We don't even mention them here because they weren't with him. He had no effect on them whatsoever, because he gave all his koach, all his energies went to Bnei Yisrael, for the 3 million Jews that he had to lead, and that's where all his energies went, and he made that tremendous sacrifice. Which brings us to the point of when we get to Shavuos. We read on Shavuos, we read Akdamas, and we read Rus. Akdamas is another situation of a person who was asked to leave, who the author of the Akdamas was asked to leave his homeland and to go and beg for the safety for Klal Yisrael, which he did. But since the scenario that he had to undergo, the logistics of what he had to do, he would never be able to return home. And why should he give up his family life again? Here's somebody who gave up his entire life for Klal Yisrael. Some people are willing to sacrifice it all for the benefit of a nation, for the benefit of other people. And this person, whose name is the acrostic of Akdamas, we see signs his name, and he was willing to sacrifice his life. Another person, obviously, who was willing to sacrifice her life is Rus. Elimelech certainly was not, and Boaz certainly was. And what we want to highlight, what do we have with Elimelech? In Parshas Rus, we see something that is incredible. Elimelech is blessed with great wealth, and he is the leader of a nation. When it says, Vayelech ish mi beis lechem Yehuda, somebody, a man of great stature, ish, he left beis lechem Yehuda. And we know, we say, Vayetze Yaakov mi Bershava, pana Ziva, pana Hoda, pana Rosha. He was one of the major leaders of Klal Yisrael, which was a tremendous burden, but also a tremendous chutz. He had all this wealth, and he could have help them survive the great famine, but when the famine came, he abandoned them. He was a major player in his town in Beis Lechem, the Beis Lechem Yehuda. It doesn't say he left the entire town, he left them stranded. Yet soon after, we don't know exactly how many years, but after he left, it says, Vatama Vayamos Elimelech Mi Ishnomi. He was, when he died, he was nobody. Nobody cared. He became from a great person in Lechem Yehuda. When he died, the only person that would miss him was Naomi. He had gone down so far that from being a leader of a nation in Beis Lechem, from one of Klal Yisrael's Mefarnesim to support them, now he gives up everything. And when he dies, he is so far down the rung. There's nobody at the funeral. Naomi is the only one left behind. And his children and his two sons die, Machlon and Chilion. They are gone as well. And Orpah could have stayed with Naomi and had her name mentioned in the Megillah. Ruth, on the other hand, and Boaz, on the other hand, they understand history. So many things that we probably would imagine how we would lead our lives if we would know that every single thing that we do would be recorded in history, and we'd be reading it 100 years from now, 200 years from now. People would be reading our lives in great detail and what it would sound like. Do we make our decisions based on how it would affect ourselves or how it would affect our fellow Jews? And that's what the messages are, lost opportunities here. Ruth took the opportunity now. Naomi was, so to speak, on the fence over here. She followed her husband, very difficult not to. But when she came home to Beis Lechem, nobody recognized her, but Ruth follows along, and Ruth is willing to follow and not look on. She was a princess at home. She could have been home, gone home with Orpah, but look at the zchus that she has, and from her we get David HaMelech. And the interesting thing is that when we have in Shavuos, what do we get from Matan Torah? When in Matan Torah we say that Kofa Aleihem Har Kegiges, we read the Aseres HaDibros, and we know before they got the Aseres HaDibros, God asked them, do you want to keep the Torah? And they all answered, Naseh. If you take a look in Parshas Yisro, as we mentioned before, when we did Parshas Yisro and Mishpatim, it only says Naseh. They originally said it, but when God started to give them all the laws, and in the end of Parshas Mishpatim, it tells us Naseh, yes, we said we will do, we will observe, but now we would like to see what's on the paper before we go any further. Naseh v'nishma, but now we would like to hear. A wonderful thing to say that they're going to accept it, but because of that, what happened? We know in the story of Purim, the story of Purim has a very interesting scenario at the end when it says, what is the greatness of Purim? It says, Kimu v'kiblu ha'yehudim aleihem v'al zarom. Suddenly now they finally were mekabel the Torah. Weren't they mekabel the Torah when they said Naseh or Naseh? The Nishma, as we see in Parshas Mishpatim, but we say, the Medrash tells us very simply, God held this mountain over their head, you know, that if you want to accept it, fine. V'imlav shem tehekvuraskem, this will be your burial place, which is an unbelievable scenario over here. So therefore, it would appear to be at this point in time, they were forced into doing it. But when we get the story of Purim, at this point in time, they now kimu v'kiblu. But the question is a very interesting one. You mean to tell me that the story of Purim is what caused them to finally accept the Torah willingly and to say we will now, in the truth of Matikimu Vikiblu, that Nasa Venishma, because in the first place it was forced upon us, we weren't given a choice really, not do or literally, it was do or die, and that's not the same thing God wants us to accept willingly. And now, after all the miracles that they've seen in all their lives, it took the story of Purim. What is so special about Purim? We know there were other miracles that God wrought for Bnei Yisrael. They had gone through so many things through their lives. And, I mean, imagine before the Churban to say that the whole army of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadran, was 185,000 soldiers. That wasn't something that was great enough to Klal Yisrael to say, Kimu v'kiblu. Why suddenly story of Purim? Well, the interesting thing is, we call Purim a nes nisa. And what does that mean? It's a nes that is not, it wasn't, no magic was done. It wasn't anything visible. But as we know, every day when the sun rises, it's a miracle as well. But it's, these are nes nisa. We take certain things for granted. But what was the tremendous beauty of the nes of Purim was, since it was a nes nisa, when we talk about why don't we say Hallel on Purim, when we say, because one reason it doesn't have, didn't happen in Eretz Yisrael, but it was a nes nisa, it wasn't a nes nigla, it wasn't something that eye-popping that we know we could see it. But Timu v'kiblu aleihem v'al tzarom, at this point in time from the story of Purim, what they originally accepted, because since this was a nes nisa, but although it was a nes nisa, certainly, but they all, at this point in time, everybody, as opposed to most of the time, things that we take for granted and we don't see the hand of God in so many miracles every day, it's like when we say V'hisha Amda, to say that Elisha B'kolda V'dar Omdim Olenu L'chalo Seinu, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, so many things. And even the Jews in Shushan at the time didn't exactly understand everything, but from one day when they were supposed to be annihilated by Haman and the Achashverosh's army, it changed on a dime. In 1 minute, everything changed, and Mordechai was on top, and Haman was hanged, and till they actually found out everything, all the particulars of exactly what brought about all these things, if it was a nes nisa, how would they know? But at this point in time, their eyes were open. Even though it was a nes nisa, it was a hidden miracle, they were able to see it and accept it and realize that Hine lo yanum v'lo yishon shomer Yisrael, that God is never sleeping. God is always watching out that we are not destroyed. And that is the idea of what we read with Rus. Rus was able to see that. Boaz was able to see that. The Jews were struggling, but when they came back to the schus of Boaz bringing forth the Melech HaMoshiach, when we think about what would have happened all the way back to the story of where does the story of Rus begin, it begins with Lot, as we know, because the Shtei Benos Lot, Batareno Shtei Benos Lot Me'avihen, that Ammon and Moab came from them, and Rus came from Moab. And therefore, imagine all of that, how it had to happen. Yehuda and Tamar, when we think back, when we connect the dots, it would seem another of the greatest of the nes nisa, because it's imagined just when we think we're waiting for that miracle that stares us in the face. But when we learn the Chumash and examine and connect the dots of all the greatness of why we read Rus to get the origin of David, just to David is Rus and how, where it came from Lot, the union of Lot with his daughters, from the union of Tamar and Yehuda, from there to from Rus and Boaz. And again, so we say Elimelech was a lost Ploni, Almoni was also lost opportunity. He could have been the one to marry Rus, but he lost his opportunity. It's an amazing thing. And that is what we have when we say lost opportunities. So, Vayelech ish mi beis lechem Yehuda, he left a great person, but after a while he became a nobody. And when he died, he was off the charts. Now, this brings us over here very much to close with the story. One of the other interesting things that we have in the Parsha, if we want to be, who are the people that had the opportunity at this point in time? It says, Ele Roshe Beis Avosam. Each tribe that was took the census had a leader, and they're enumerated. Ele Roshe Beis Avosam. And we notice one other thing that's very interesting in the census. It says, Lemishpachosam. What is Lagugalosam? When we take a look at Parshas Pinchas, when they do the census in Parshas Pinchas, there is no word legugalosum, and that's very strange. It means basically the head, but the reality is we take a look, if we read from Parshas, when we learn Perek, and we know the famous story when it says at the end of one of the prokim, I believe the first parak, and it says that Hillel Shera, who gola shetzof al pnei hamayim, he saw a head bobbing in the water. But what does that mean? Why is the term gugoles? Because what it means is it was a dead person bobbing in the water. It doesn't say a rosh. The heads of the shvatim were rosh. The gugolos, some are, so to speak, just a round sphere like a ball, a dead head. So why does it say for the shvatim, why does it use the term legulgalos, mishpachosom, legulgalosom? Well, very interesting, because if we're doing a standing army, the soldiers, the grunt, the army that is, has their marching orders, all they are told to do, they are given orders, and they are not told to think for themselves. They're given a job to do, and only the Eila Roshei Beis Avosom, the leaders, are the ones who have their moach, who have the head to do the leadership, to make all the decisions. The Gulgalosom, the army, the cavalry, so to speak, they are just, theirs is not the reason why, theirs but to do and die. They are the Gulgalosom. And how do we know that? Because we could see that very interestingly enough, because which tribe, when it says the census is given to us, is not used the word Gulgalosom, doesn't have it. And that is very simply Shevet Levi. Why not Shevet Levi? It doesn't use the word Gulgalosom. Because the reality is Shevet Levi did not go to war. So they had to do the avoda. They were the teachers. Everyone in Shevet Levi, their job was to use their heads. They had to think for themselves and be the teachers of Klal Yisrael. That was the job of all the Levim and the Kohanim, as opposed to the soldiers who were doing it. In Parshas Pinchas, it doesn't say the word Gulgalosom, because God is counting his dear leftover people after the Magepha of Korach and after what happened with Bilam, and they lost approximately 39,000 to 40,000 people died in those two Magephas, and therefore God is now saying how many I had left, so he's treating them as Rosh, as the word Rosh means a living head. Gulgalosom is somebody who is lifeless, who doesn't have a head on his shoulders, doesn't have a head of his own. And that's why he says Gulgolet. May we be among the people who don't lose opportunities in their life. There are people who opportunity comes knocking, and so many times we look back, do we want to be sorry for the things that we didn't do, or do we want to say we opened the door and we saw the opportunity? And certain people, certainly like Boaz and Ruth and Moshe in particular, these are the people who took the bull by the horns and realized they may be sacrificing. Ruth didn't know what her future was. She didn't latch on to a millionaire over here. She latched on to Nami, who had nothing, and it made her the great-grandmother of none other than David HaMelech, who was Ben Mashiach Ben David. And that is her legacy to Klal Yisrael. May we all be zocha to have our children and our grandchildren be leaders of Klal Yisrael. But it all takes making sure that we don't close the door and lose opportunities when they're standing before us. Have a wonderful Shavuos. Thank you.
Rabbi, God bless you. Thanks. And Rivka and the family, and all. You should have a beautiful Shavuot. Thank you for your shir.
Thank you. You too.